welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, where are you going to take your holiday visitors for their best dining experience in and around Chapel Hill? Well, there is good advice. It's just in time from our favorite food expert, Morton Neal. Her new book, it's really an updated book, but it's called 2013 Chapel Hill Food Lover's Guide with Carrboro and Hillsboro. You didn't forget, did you, Morton Neal, that there's a lot of good eating in Carrboro and Hillsboro?
There is wonderful eating in Carrboro and Hillsboro, absolutely. The whole county is just absolutely full of good eats.
You know, you've already written this book.
Well, yeah. It's different this time. I did write it, but the Visitors Bureau that hired me to do it, the Orange County Visitors Bureau, thought it needed updating. And the original one was published in, I think, 2007. And, of course, 2008, everything crashed and burned. So, not everything in our county, but there was a time when restaurants closed and not very many opened. And then by about 2010, we started having several new restaurants to open. And, of course, some of the old ones changed chefs. And
so it's a whole new ballgame. Well, is not the question I meant to ask, but how many did we lose from your earlier book? Like 10 or 15 or something like that?
Something like that, 12-ish.
And which one – this is not fair, but which one do you miss the most?
You know, actually, none of my favorites closed.
Ah.
I'm kind of sorry to lose Spice Street, even though something fairly similar has gone back in its place. But
tell us that story, because this is always a good story about what Waukesha is doing.
Well, that's a good question. I can only make up one because for sure. But okay,
make it up. You're the authority.
You know George Waukesha. If something isn't working, he shuts it off and reinvents it and opens up again with something completely different, and that's what he did.
Many of the rest of us are sort of change averse. Is that right? We don't like change too much. We like to go to our old places. We like to do our old things. We like our old jobs. We don't like to be fired and moved on. But George likes change.
He's a risk taker.
He takes a risk. If it doesn't work, he'll close it down, start something else. Or even if it does work, he'll move on to something else sometime.
Well, I think he's just one of those incredibly creative people, and he's just got all kinds of ideas, and it's all about the creation for him. Mm-hmm. It's not about the maintaining.
So one of the things that your book does is it reports the loss of Spice Street, and then it reports on a new restaurant that's located in the Spice Street location at University Mall.
Yes. Well, I actually don't mention the restaurants that have closed. I just have plugged in all the new ones.
I promise you that I read your book, and you did mention that this was in the location of Spice Street. We don't want to argue about that.
Well, you're right. You're right. But, I mean, I don't.
You don't
make
have a list
point
of. Yeah, you, there's
of
no
it.
Graveyard. Yeah. There's no graveyard.
Right.
In
but if a restaurant opens in the place of another, like Elements opened in the place that Arcura used to be. I'm not sure I mentioned that Arcura was there before. I may or may not have. But, you know, that would be the context if I said something closed. And, you know, you're right. I probably did. But, you know, I didn't.
Didn't make a big deal of it.
Yeah,
these are the
gone. Yeah.
Farewell to these wonderful or these restaurants that you may have loved. They're not here anymore. That could be another.
We
book.
Had a lot more good ones open.
All right. Well, you don't have to just start telling us about some of the new ones.
Well, I think the very newest one is Elements. Have you been there yet, DJ?
Yeah, but tell us about Elements.
It's. Well, the reason I
Where is it and what does it do?
It's in East 54 Shopping Center where Saffron is. It's down the block from Saffron, and Saffron is now called Raja. That's another change. Of course, Saffron was new to this book anyway. It's only a couple of years old.
Yeah.
So it was before it.
So you had
before
to say.
It became Raja, I mean, it was never in the book as Saffron. It's now.
Well, what tell us about the former Raja. Saffron, now Raj, before you get to Elements, and then tell us about that restaurant, which is a pretty good one.
Yeah, we'll just cover everything on that block.
This is the new building. This is the building that everybody likes to complain about. The tall building close to the road.
Are they still complaining? It seems like it's just part of the landscape now. I've forgotten that it was never there.
Anyway, just to help locate it, it's
that's right.
On
right.
54 going towards Metamont.
Well, people are complaining about a lot of buildings in town, so it's not the only one. But Saffron opened. Saffron is a beautiful restaurant. They have a sort of an ebony pavilion in the middle of the restaurant.
It's now called Raj.
And, well, it opened as Saffron because the same people owned it that owned Saffron in Morrisville.
Okay.
And they, once Saffron was open, they broke off with the one in Morrisville. I don't know whether they were, it was two brothers or partners or whatever. But the one in Saffron became more upscale. And I think they just had a little identity problem. They did not want to be associated with a more downscale Saffron. They wanted it to be kind of a high-end gourmet.
Oh, I see. So, and this is Indian food, is
it's
that right?
It's very wonderful Indian food.
And is it from a particular region of India, or is it just
It's pretty
overall,
much all over.
All over.
Yeah. And but so, what happened was they had a chef, and then they got a new chef. The new chef was the mentor of the old chef. The new chef, whose name I can't remember, grew up in Delhi and opened a wonderful restaurant there and has had restaurants all over the world. He's a big shot. So he decided to come down and kind of ramp down his life like a lot of people do in Chapel Hill and took over the restaurant. And so now, I believe, because they have they've moved in another direction from the original second chef, Saffron, you know, and now he wants his stamp on it. So they're changing it to Raja, which is too bad because Saffron was so easy to remember.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knows what Raja means. I think it means the joy of living or something.
Well, and you got a favorite dish that you'd recommend there or just?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, and I didn't mention this, but I'm not happy about it. My favorite dish was this okra appetizer. It was this crispy, kind of spicy okra, and everybody loved it. That was everybody's favorite dish at Saffron. I went there recently, and he'd taken it off the menu.
We'll start
shocked.
A protest movement.
I'm protesting
okra,
right now. I hope they're
listening
to me.
Put the okra back on the menu. When you go to Raja, which used to be Saffron's,
that's right.
Say you really want the okra, and I get you, and we'll get it back
Thank
on
you.
The menu for you.
Right.
Now, we started talking about Raj, formerly Saffron's, because it's in the tall building on Highway 54 mm-hmm. going out of town that's had controversy some years ago. But now there's a new restaurant that you're high on
that's
nearby.
Uh-huh. And it's the same man who opened On in Cary. Did you ever eat it On?
No, I never did.
Well, it's a beautiful freestanding building built just to house this man's cooking, and his name is Michael Chong. He was a Vietnamese orphan who grew up in New Orleans. And so his cuisine is a combination of Asian and kind of Creole cuisine. It's very interesting and not like any other Asian fusion food I've ever tasted. He's got a unique touch.
So this is not something that you can define as being anything other than a combination of stuff. It's not.
Well, unfortunately, I think he's not continuing that tradition at Elements. He left On, and I don't know why, because Ann Goodnight opened it for him.
Well,
they were partners, and I don't know what has happened with that. But On has a new chef, and Michael is over here. And this is a very modest little restaurant. It's nothing like On, but I really expected it to be that same kind of wonderful food that I would drive to Cary for in a minute.
So maybe the same, maybe not in the same extraordinarily beautiful surroundings, but it would have the same
attractive
food.
It's small. It's attractive. The menu is different. He calls it American regional cuisine, so it's not Asian at all, although I've heard a few people recently say that he's starting to put a few Asian things on the menu, which I think is a good idea.
So this
that's
is
what
sort
he's
of
famous for.
Brand new, maybe. This is just a year or two old.
It's not even that old. It opened this fall, just a couple of months old. So he has yet to really hit his stride over there. It's still a little bumpy. But his cooking is heavenly.
Well,
and I'm happy to have him in the neighborhood.
All right. Well, we're talking with Morton Neal about her new book, Chapel Hill Food Lover's Guide, with Carborough and Hillsborough, and talking about the new additions since the first edition of the book the same book that she wrote 4 or 5 years ago. And now, tell us about some other of the new places.
The new ones?
I'll tell you what, let's do more, Neil. Let's take a break. We'll come back and talk about some more new ones. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin, and my guest is Morton Neal, our resident food expert, writer of books, of newspaper columns, and
it's because I can't say no.
All kinds of things. So she's the kind of girl you always like to meet. She's just a girl who can't say no. and famous in the history of restaurants in Chapel Hill, but now she is a historian and a compiler and a chronicler.
You live long enough and you've got a history.
You're just like Winston.
It happens.
You're just like Winston Churchill. You made history and then now you write about it.
Well, I'd much rather write about it than making it. When it comes to the restaurant business, I'm happy not to be in the kitchen.
I don't know. It's inside talk between me and Morton, and what we're talking about is that she and her then husband, Bill Neal, led the revolution to bring great eating to Chapel Hill. And we've talked about that before. We'll talk about it again. But today we're talking about other people's restaurants.
Other people's restaurants.
And new restaurants in your new Food Lover's Guide. Tell us about some more new places.
Well, I think the most popular restaurants that have opened in the last couple of years are Kitchen and One. One was opened by the man that does Foursquare in Durham, and then his sous chef took over. His sous chef is named Sean McCarthy. The kitchen is open, so you'll see Sean back
there. Where is it, Morton?
It's in Metamon. There was a restaurant that was there years ago and closed, and this place just sat there for years. And then suddenly it says One on it, and
that's the name of the restaurant.
It's a restaurant, One Restaurant. Yeah,
there's some. You described some very interesting features of One, like you can watch what's going on. Sort of is
you can, and I personally don't really understand this open kitchen thing, but some people love it. I mean, particularly if you're dining alone, you can just sit there at this bar that surrounds the kitchen and watch folks cook.
You've been inside the kitchen enough. You don't. When you go now, you just want to be on the outside and not watch.
Also, I've been on the inside of the kitchen, and I would not be comfortable with the diners watching me cook because you can't curse, you can't pick your nose. I mean, it's terrible.
Well, that would be
These
pretty.
People have to behave all the time.
But part of the eating and cooking and the foodie experience is the show, is the showmanship, is
that
how it's designed.
Of television and, that's,
and what it looks like and then how you do it.
And also the ego of the chef. I think a lot of it has to do with the way chefs now are considered stars. And it's not, you're not just a servant anymore. You are a big
chef. You're the personality.
It's not the
owner of the restaurant. What was the guy's name at the Stork Club? Shelton, whatever his name is. He would go around from table to table and make you feel comfortable.
Right. It's the chef now. I'm glad that this trend has evolved.
When you become the personality and people want to see you and talk to you, you can't really do the job as well back in the kitchen, can you, supervise?
Well, my feeling about an open kitchen is it really would be so distracting, for me anyway. Mm-hmm. I don't see how they do it. I admire that they do it, but it seems like it would be hard to be watched.
We're talking about One, which is a new restaurant as far as the Morton Neal's new book, Food Lover's Guide, Chapel Hill Food Lover's Guide, 2013. But tell us some more about the restaurant and what you say it's popular. Why is it popular?
At One, I hope it's popular because I think Sean is very, very talented. In fact, he's one of the most creative chefs in the whole county. But he's very experimental. And sometimes he gets on kind of tangents where he'll take something like foam and the menu will just have all kinds of foam in it.
And foam? What do you...
Foam. It's this macro gastronomy kind of... I think it's a gimmick.
Like
I'm not
cream?
Obviously
is it
not
whipped,
into foam.
Whipped egg whites
no,
or what is
it's
it?
Some kind of machine where you can turn seaweed into foam and you can turn anything into foam.
Oh, I see.
DG, and
so
you
it's
just
a
spray it on top.
So you
of
don't
the
like
meat.
It just because it's so super mechanical and it's not.
I just don't think it tastes like real food. It's controversial.
And
I'm
so,
not a
but
fan.
foam is one of the things that you're not happy with about one, but you are happy about a lot of things, including the talent of the chef. And
yes.
Where does he show the talent? What are his specialties?
He changes the menu all the time, and so I can't tell you what is on the menu now, or even the last thing
well,
I ate there.
It's going to be a surprise.
It's going to be a surprise because that's most of our restaurants are seasonal and produce oriented. And that's one of the great things that's going on here that we don't – that every town, every little town doesn't have, which is the focus on produce that we do. But Sean, he just has really wonderfully interesting creative combinations. And I do remember something I got recently that was so good. It was just amazing. And it was a tuna carpaccio, which is thinly sliced raw tuna. And on the plate, he had a scoop of beet sorbet. And it sounds...
Yeah, it kind of sounds interesting.
It could hit or miss, but it just was a really wonderful combination.
But, yeah, that's wild. That's
yeah.
wild.
Now, the oyster with the seaweed foam I wasn't so crazy about, but the beet sorbet with the
But did you try it? Did
fantastic.
You try the oyster with the
oh,
seaweed
yeah.
foam?
Oh, yeah. I will always order the oddest thing on the menu. The things that sound the worst, I will order because I think it sounds so bad...
It had to be good or they wouldn't have put it on the menu.
Yeah.
Well, just a general question while we're on that topic. I mean, you love food and you're an expert and you love to try new things. And so when you go into the restaurant, I guess people know you. And so when you go in, you're kind of a celebrity. And so the chef wants to take care of you and
Sometimes.
Wants to be sure you get. But what if not?
And not you, always.
And do you ask the serving person what's kind of new and fresh? Or do you say,
I do.
How do you ask that question?
I almost always say, what's the best thing on the menu? And if it's, whether they know me or not, it's a good way to gauge how in tune with the kitchen the service is. Mm-hmm. And a good wait person will say, oh, we just got in. The most wonderful
fish, fresh fish or beef,
cobia or something, and it's just got to the kitchen this morning, and it's just practically out of the water, and it really is outstanding. You'll have to try it.
But sometimes they say, "Huh?"
Yeah,
and then what do you do then?
I don't really eat here, or that's a bad sign when the chef does not
train his serving people,
the staff. A taste of everything. If they don't know, if they haven't tasted what he's serving, they're not going to give you the best service, or they're certainly not going to be able to guide you.
Would you have the courage if the serving person said, I don't know, to say, well, would you bring me a tasting plate so I can decide for myself since you haven't a recommendation for me? That would be rude, wouldn't it? That wouldn't work.
Too sympathetic toward the kitchen to do anything like that, having been a cook myself. And that's why I never... could be a great restaurant critic because
you won't do these. Well, could you
I'm
say
not harsh enough?
Well, if in the case of a young serving person who's caught out there and you know you're unhappy because they can't give you the information, could you say? Would the chef have time to come out and talk to us for just a minute? Could you? Is that just?
But I don't because when I was cooking, it was hard to do that. When you're in the middle of cooking for a lot of people, it's really hard to just stop what you're doing and go out and talk to people. Although now with open kitchens, it's a little bit – I guess they expect that. But this does not happen in the better restaurants. I mean, if this happens to me,
you might get up and go to them.
Don't want to go back. I don't leave. But, I just think, okay, this is not – this restaurant is not supervised well. And there's one in town, actually, that I didn't want to put in, and I'm not going to say what it is. I put it in, but just very, very, very little brief description.
What page is that one on?
I don't know, but it starts with a V.
All right. Well, let's see. Before we get you in too much trouble, let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the other new restaurants that you've identified. We're visiting with Morton Neal. Morton has written the second edition of her Food Lover's Guide. It's now the 2013 Chapel Hill Food Lover's Guide with Carborough and Hillsborough. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Morton Neal. We're talking about her latest book, Chapel Hill Food Lover's Guide. It's the 2013 edition. And we've been talking, Morton, about some of the new restaurants that have come into being since the early edition of this book. And I'm having lots of fun learning.
I want to talk about a couple of bars because I didn't do that before. The old edition had no bars in it, but the bars have gotten so interesting in town that I thought they
Yeah, I love your description of Crumpleton's.
Crumpleton's is really fun, yeah.
And what other bars?
There's one called Peccadillo or Peccadillo. It's like a speakeasy. It has no sign. It does no advertising. It doesn't even have a window.
Oh, you know, that just makes you want to go there, doesn't it? It's just
It does, as a matter of fact. It works. You know, it's a New York kind of thing. It's catty-cornered from Crooks across the Carborough line where the car wash is. Do you know that corner where the car wash is?
Yeah.
Well, it's around the corner in that same building from the car wash.
The same building as the car wash?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
It's like a warehouse.
Uh-huh.
And not even that. It's more like a closet. You know, you just don't even.
And what do you go in there and get? Just liquor, or do you get some food in there too, or what? Can you get a snack?
They have they've got this concept worked out so that they just know how to hook you. You know, if you like this kind of thing, because they only serve the best liquors. They have food, but they only serve two things. One is a charcuterie platter, wonderful, interesting sausages that you don't see anywhere else. They get them from New York. And the other is a cheese platter, really interesting European artisan cheeses. And they serve it with a sliced baguette, but it's the best French bread I've ever had, outside France, of course. But and that's all. They serve three mixed drinks, a Negroni, a Martini, and a Manhattan.
Nothing else. So no wine, no beer.
They do have wines. They do have beers. But
as far as mixed drinks are concerned, we do three mixed drinks good or well.
Yeah.
We're not going to try to mess around with the others. If you don't like these, go someplace else.
Exactly. No, you know, bikini teenies and things like that.
Yeah.
The goofy
yeah.
sweet drinks that,
yeah.
you know, college kids like. But it's very sophisticated, obviously.
You have to dress up to go?
No, absolutely not. No. I mean, it's not that kind of uptown sophisticated. Uh-huh. That's gone, DG. Nobody
dresses up anymore.
But you look wonderful in your tie.
That's kind of funny because you are catching me when I'm feeling kind of old. And I remember when I was growing up, the old men had the funny collars and sometimes they would wear long coats. You know, I mean, these were the really old guys. They would dress up more.
How old are you?
I'm old. And they would dress up and their collars would be bent down like in the pictures that you'd see 100 years ago. And you say, that's an old guy. And now what they do is they see a guy walking around with a coat and tie. They say, that's an old guy. And so, you know, there I am.
Well, I'm flattered that you put on that tie just for me. I'm assuming you did.
It was,
you know, I'm old enough to appreciate it.
I don't think you appreciate it enough. Well, so bars are a new thing, and then you've got some other new things, and you've got some things about where even if you're preparing meals at home, you can go in Chapel Hill to get some help. That is, you can buy food or you can buy prepared dishes. You got some places.
I put in Whole Foods in Weaver Street.
In Southern Seasons, you got
I forgot to put, and I'm very sorry about this, Fresh Market. I wish I'd included that because it's in my neighborhood for one thing, and I use it all the time.
Well,
but when I'm there on weekends, I will invariably see somebody who's dressed up So you can tell they're from out of town. They're here for the game or something. And they're oohing and aahing over the things on the shelves. And they'll, you know, they'll ask me a question or something and say, well, I'm from out of town and we don't have this in our town. And
so what are they getting? Are they getting stuff to take home or are they getting stuff to eat on the on the way to the game? Or what are they?
I think they're between the game and dinner or something, and so they just decided to go in and get some
and shop a little bit.
I don't know,
get something to take home,
or
maybe.
Cheese
Well, now,
whatever.
How do you? We're going to give Fresh Market a lot of attention because you left them out of your book.
I know. And Fresh Market, I am sorry.
So, tell us why you like it so much.
Small. For one thing, and of course, we all adore Whole Foods, but it can be overwhelming.
Right. So you go to the Fresh Market and, like, you live nearby, so you're on your way home and Drake's hungry and you haven't fixed anything. Do you buy a meal there or do you just buy
Well, you can. Actually, they have a deli, but the deli is not the best part of Fresh Market at all. The produce is not its forte, nor is the deli. But they do have a really nice meat section. And some of the fish that you can get there is fresh and quite good. They do have prepared meats. You know, they've got different kinds of hamburgers. They've got different kinds of wonderful sausages.
So it's a good emergency place if you get company coming in.
Atlantic shrimp is always good. You can count on their shrimp being good to take home and boil. They've got things like crab cakes that are delicious that you take home and heat up. A nice little cheese and wine section and frozen section. They have things that you don't get in other grocery stores.
Well,
they're all good. I mean, you don't have just rows and rows and rows of bird's eye vegetables. They have hand-picked interesting items. So I wouldn't go – if I lived in Hillsborough, I wouldn't drive all the way down to Fresh Market.
Great neighborhood market.
But for my neighborhood, it's
a great thing.
It's a good addition.
Well,
yeah.
I want to talk to you about some other things, but talk about Hillsborough or maybe Carrboro first and then Hillsborough. Just what's going on generally in those neighborhoods?
Carrboro hasn't changed too much. You know, it's nicknamed Paris of the Piedmont, and it has gotten more and more Parisian in a way because there are more and more food venues downtown, and a lot of them have outdoor dining. So it is compared to downtown Chapel Hill, it's very approachable and lots of great choices. It's not stuffy at all. It's just kind of it's more than Chapel Hill. It is really a foodie town.
So should you just drive into Carrboro and pick out first place you come to?
Well, they've got a good parking lot now where the hardware store used to be, so you can park there and just walk around and figure out what kind of food you want.
Well, there's a nice place you ought to talk about family, and there's a nice place walking distance from that parking lot that's a little deli.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Neil's Deli.
Neil's Deli.
That's my son and daughter-in-law's.
It's kind of fantastic, isn't it?
Just don't have enough room in there.
Yeah, but is it sustainable? The food is great.
We'll see if it's sustainable. They really.
But I mean, they've got lots of fans. And why is that? What do they do that's so special that makes people want to go there? And even though there's not a place to sit down or a lot of places to sit down, I see people sort of sitting on the steps and eating.
Well, they now have picnic tables in front, which helps. That gives them, you know, in good weather, people really like to be outside.
What is the food that sells so that's so?
Pastrami. They make their own pastrami and corned beef. Everything is fresh. Even the egg salad is made from farm fresh eggs. It just, everything tastes better if it's fresh. And they get wonderful bread from Gugelhoff. They don't use any, you know, boar's head or any kind of packaged products. It's all made there.
Well, you've been through this business.
So it's really hard work for them.
Yeah,
did
you not teach your son that this is a hard business then?
Yeah. I said, don't do it. And he didn't pay a bit of attention to me. I said, stay away from the food business. But all my children have been in the food business or are in the food business. So
the family business.
Wasted words.
What about Hillsborough?
Hillsboro.
This is kind of funny. You hear about our friends who live up there, and it's really close, but it seems so far away from Chapel Hill. Yet the folks who start driving up there and visiting the restaurants there get hooked.
They open Weaver Street in the middle of town, which it just suddenly made it a food destination. Panciuto is just about the most amazing restaurant in the county, and that's worth a drive up there for sure. But now they've got Antonio's, Tupelo's Close.
Which is a surprise sort of for some people.
Yeah, it just kind of petered out, I guess. And Antonio's opened in its place. There are two Italian women, and I think Antonio's husband is the chef. They had a restaurant, I believe, in Florida, and got out of the business and then decided they wanted to go back in the business. That happens a lot in Chapel Hill.
That people come here to retire and then can't stand it, that other people are having what looks like fun from the outside, and they can't remember what torture it was.
Well, they can't get it out of their blood, you know, so they go back into it. And Antonio's is a really friendly place with terrific Italian food, kind of gutsy, you know, weeknight food. You don't have to wait to a special occasion to really use Antonio's. It's medium priced, and have you not been there yet? It's great.
No, I'm going there now, though. But right now we got to take a break. We're visiting with Morton Neal about the latest edition of the Chapel Hill Food Lover's Guide with Carbora and Hillsboro. She and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Morton Neal. We're talking about food, all in connection with the latest edition of the 2013 edition of the Chapel Hill Food Lover's Guide. You know, we could talk all day long. I mean, you've got 100, I'm saying that, almost 100. I mean, there are just a bunch of really interesting places to eat. But there are some people who have other concerns, like
cooking at home,
like cooking at home, or presents for people, or other things. And you've been working on a column, you told me, about some ideas about some currently available books that you'd recommend. You want to share those with us?
You know, I used to do restaurant sort of reviews for Metro Magazine, mm-hmm. and I left them about a year ago and intended not to write as much. But Chapel Hill Weekly invited me to do a column. And I said, well, what do you want? And they said, well, what do you want to write? Anything you're thinking about. And I decided I wanted to do recipes. So every 2 weeks, I write a column followed by a recipe. And I'm really having a good time.
Is it fun?
It's so much fun because now that I've done the restaurant guide, I had to eat out so much that
it's a treat. So you've been there, done that.
It's a treat to cook at home. And think about, you know, the recipe I want to share with people and what the backstory is.
So this is this writing is entirely different from your new book. This is This is what I do when I don't go out to eat.
It's more like my cookbook where I wrote a little memoirish piece about each recipe. And not all of it is a memoir. I mean, it can be about an event that happens in town or a cookbook writer that I've gone to see at Flyleaf or something, and you know, a lot of times I can give a recipe out of that book. You have to ask permission, but
That's interesting to me that if you're writing a review of a cookbook and you want to share a piece of it with your audience, you need to contact the author and say, "I'm writing a review or something about your book. May I share this restaurant?"
You do. And most people have a way that you can do that, or I adapt it and I say, you know, I got the inspiration for this recipe mm-hmm. from such and such book, and I kind of make my own version of it. But yesterday I got an email from the publisher of Sarah Foster's cookbook that sent me a bill for $150 to use the recipe that I put in here.
So you didn't get permission, or you did, and and you sought permission, and they said it's going to cost you $150. Yeah. Or this was a surprise.
It was a surprise. I don't know what I'm going to do about that.
Well, it's interesting to me, and this is a topic for another day because I don't know where I'm going with this.
That's never happened to me before. I thought that
was you're
pretty bold.
Giving good announcement and publicity for that book.
This is not Sarah Foster's doing at all. Yes. She was very generous with her recipe. It's the publisher.
Well,
isn't that something?
Yeah, well, that's something.
Stunned.
Well, Sarah Foster will take care of that for you, won't she?
Well, she's so wonderful. I'm sure she will.
Yeah,
if she
I know
can.
She will. I know she will. Because you say such nice things about it in the book. Now, if you go about sort of back to this idea when you're writing about her in your newspaper column, you're going to be a little bit more careful about using a recipe.
Yeah.
In fact, you might. I mean, what you may be scared off from going. I mean, you see,
I don't think it's a great strategy on the part of the publisher, but you know, that's their business. But we were talking about cookbooks for presents, and Sarah didn't have a book that came out this year. It seems to me that she has a book almost every year, and it's always a great present. And I love her cooking, and I love her cookbook. So,
well, she had one last year. And
she's probably working on another one. I'd be surprised if she weren't. But, yeah, she did have one last year.
And still good. And
the
what
Southern
about
one, yeah. But UNC Press has come out with a lot of cookbooks this year, really good ones. And one of them they've done is a reissue in honor of the 20th anniversary of Hop and John's Low Country Cooking, which was one of the first of this kind of new Southern regional cookbooks. He was a real innovator. He and Bill Neal were kind of working at the same time to bring back these old recipes and kind of rewrite them to orient them more toward fresh produce.
And this is a straight-out recipe book?
Yeah.
Or it's not
the
memoir?
Not the memoir
like your book about remembering Bill Neal?
No, it is a recipe book, except that he does have stories about low country food and lore. So it's an interesting book. If you don't necessarily have to cook out of it to find it interesting, but
and low country meaning
great.
Low country, South Carolina?
Charleston and the coast of Georgia and South Carolina.
Well, let's move along. What are some other ideas for presents or for just for yourself if you're
cookbooks that I really am giving people. Fred Thompson, who is a prolific cookbook writer and also the publisher of Edible Piedmont, has come out with Fred Thompson's Southern Sides. And they're old-timey recipes like succotash and then his adaptations of old recipes. It's not a vegetarian book. He uses meat in a lot of the recipes, but vegetarians would appreciate this book because there are plenty of vegetarian recipes, and they're just all delicious. He's got a great
What's the name of that book? Southern Sides?
Fred Thompson's Southern Sides.
And UNC Press book. What else you got?
Jean Anderson lives here in Chapel Hill, and she is – I'm sure you've talked to Jean before. She's amazing.
A pistol. Yeah, she's great.
She just keeps on shooting them out, and – she's got a new one called From a Southern Oven, The Sweets, The Savories. And I love that one. And it's good for winter cooking particularly because that's when you want to have your oven on and do all these braises and you know, cookies and things like that.
This is baking, but as I remember she said, it's not just sweets. It's not just the cakes and cookies. It's
casseroles and things, one-dish meals. Yeah.
I should just say, Morton, I mean, you know, I'm not in the food group like you are, but Jean Anderson is a nationally known cookbook author and a food expert, and she lives right here in Chapel Hill.
She may be the best cookbook writer in the country, and she's in the James Beard Hall of Fame. I mean, she's had so many best-selling cookbooks, and they're all delightful. But she also did a preserving guide. She can write about any facet of cooking. You know, some cookbook writers have their specialties, like the Adele's meat book. You know, it's always about meat. But she can do baking. She can do preserving. Yeah. She can do
I love Jean Anderson. You can make her mad when you start talking about the celebrities who write cookbooks, and we know that they're being ghostwritten by. I mean, it just.
I know her well, yeah. And I know what you're talking about.
But real quick, because we've got about a minute more, and then you just list the rest of them, or just real quick. Got any more?
This is not UNC Press, but it's Mastering the Art of Southern Cooking by Natalie Dupre, and I can't believe nobody's done this before. It's a brilliant idea.
It's coming off the Julia Child's Mastering the Art of, and does it work?
It's going to be great. It's going to be great. Yeah. I think it's
a
brilliant book. She is another prolific cookbook writer who now lives in Charleston. She originally she started teaching cooking lessons in Atlanta. In fact, I went to France with her 30 years ago. She was specializing in French food back then, kind of on the tales of Julia Child. And she switched over to Southern regional cooking, and she's had at least 15 books.
Mastering the Art of Southern Cooking. Well, that's Morton Neal. We haven't hardly gotten started celebrating your new book, Chapel Hill Food Lover's Guide, updated edition, with Carbara and Hillsborough. Thanks for the book, and thanks for giving us the time to visit with you.
Always fun, D.G. Thank you.
Always fun for me. And thanks to you for listening. This has been D.G. Martin and Who's Talking, and I'll be back here before you know it. Thank you.